No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the 3Down Podcast. My name is John Hodge, and I'm joined by the Chief Jason Abbott. Fresh off a fantastic CFL draft broadcast. You and Ben granted a fantastic job on the live stream. I wish that the CFL draft tracker had done even a fraction as well as you guys did. There were no picks coming in. It was chaos having to rein in some of these selections, but you guys handled it like pros. My hat comes off to you. Not literally, because it's covering my bald head, but figuratively, my hat comes off to you.
Well, I appreciate that, Hodge. And I always compare the draft to my Christmas. Well, if that's the case, I'm going to give a big lump of coal to the CFL as their gift, because that was absolutely ridiculous. I know the draft is a niche event, but as a football league, it's one of your marquee off-season events. And to have the thing that communicates to fans not functioning during it is simply unacceptable. And then to not pivot to some other form or function to get that information out there, we were having to go team by team searching Twitter, and the teams weren't even putting out the information at the same rate, Hodge. There was one point where I knew that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers had taken Ethan Vibert at 37 overall because they'd already tweeted it out, but we didn't have picks tweeted out for pick 24. So we were a full round behind because some teams were jumping ahead and others were going at the pace of the TSN broadcast. It was an absolutely insane circumstance to manage, and the league did not do a good job of handling that crisis.
Yeah, I had the same moment of panic. And for the uninitiated, the way that the draft goes is the first two rounds is for television. The rest of the draft goes super quick. Like, it goes at the rate of the conference call. And so the first two rounds, there's not a lot of pressure, at least for us behind the scenes, because you know there's going to be a lot of banter between each pick. We can get our graphics done. We can get our reporting done, all of those things. Once round three starts, it is an absolute panic mad dash. And so I had that same gut-wrenching feeling when the Hamilton Tiger Cats with the first pick in the third round, I guess it was the second pick in the third round, took Arvin Hossini, offensive lineman out of UBC. And then the next thing I saw was the Winnipeg Blue Bombers taking Ethan Vibert at 27. I think he misspoke, JC. He said 37. He went 27. But I was like, oh my God, we're over halfway through the round. What's going on? And then all of a sudden I had to open 9 tabs going through all the different teams. And a very simple solution to this was simply for the CFL to use its CFL communications account at CFL_PR, which exclusively exists for the league to tweet out information and news that is pertinent for members of the media, and just do that with the conference call, right? Because that way all the information is coming out of one central spot from an official source. And they didn't do that. The CFLPR account tweeted zero times on draft day. The only thing it did is it retweeted the Calgary Stampeders' selection of punter Fraser Masson with the first overall pick of the global draft. They didn't tweet. So that to me was a big miss, a big disappointment. Also, by the way, I think the draft tracker is passe anyway. It's looked the same for 15 years. Some of the information I thought was better this year. There have been years where they haven't even updated the heights and weights from combine. Like, they've just gone with what guys are listed at in college, some of which is way, way, way off. So that was positive. But in all, that's something that I would hope the league looks at for 2026. Okay, what can we do to make this draft tracker look like it was made more recently than 2012? And what can we do to ensure that it at very least works, right? The working part is non-negotiable. It has to function. It didn't. It very briefly functioned. I celebrated that on Twitter, and then it stopped working. So I accepted responsibility for that. I jinxed it. But anyway, hopefully this can get sorted for next year, and hopefully we get something even better. Because again, the draft tracker looks dated. It looks kind of tacky. I will also acknowledge that Three Down Nation also looks cheap and tacky. Sometimes we could use an upgrade on our website, but we also have a slightly smaller budget than the CFL does for these types of things. So hopefully the draft tracker gets upgraded for 2026.
The last thing I'll say on this subject, Hodge, is I know that the draft isn't for everyone, and there will be people who say this is not a valid criticism because there's not enough people that care. Well, if you want people to care about your league and you want people to care about the Canadian stars that are entering into it, then you've got to do the bare minimum, right? You've got to give them the tools to make them care. People wouldn't care about the NFL draft either, except that they've got access to watching these guys in college football. They've got tons of analysis. They've got dozens of mock drafts. They've got full draft boards on major media sites. They have all the information. So as a casual fan, even if I'm just tuning in on draft day, I can have basic amounts of information, and then I can reliably expect to get those picks given to me in real time. Unfortunately, the CFL does not do a good enough job in the lead up to the draft highlighting these prospects, in my opinion. And on draft day, they completely fumbled the ball with the tracker. It's got to be addressed going forward. We can't have this happen another time.
I'll disagree to some extent on the first part. I thought CFL.ca had way more draft coverage this year than it has in the past, but I certainly 1,000% agree on the second part. And this was an issue that was raised when Stuart Johnston had his introductory press conference, is like, on the one hand, it's like, well, the league needs to do a better job of getting the media out. It's like, well, if you invite the Toronto Star and they just don't come, what are you to do? Are you going to bribe them? Like, are we just going to start handing out bags full of you can't twist an arm. So yes, would the CFL like for its draft rankings to be on the front page of every newspaper in the country? I'm sure the answer is yes. Would it like the draft rankings to be on the front page of every online Canadian news source? Yes. There's not much they could do about that. One thing they can, however, do is get a damn draft tracker that actually works. So hopefully that will happen for 2026. Enough whining, JC. Let's get into our coast-to-coast breakdown. Obviously, you and Ben Grant broke down all of the selections as they came in. I was going to say live. It was, again, some of it was delayed out of order, but you guys did a fantastic job adjusting to some very bizarre circumstances. We today are going to break down the draft by team. So we're going to go coast to coast. We're starting west. We're going east. We're going opposite the sun. We're going to start with the team that you primarily covered, JC, the BC Lions. Second round, this team had two picks in that round after trading up to get to 16 overall. They took Hayden Harris, defensive lineman out of Montana, defensive back Jackson Findlay. And then from rounds four onward, they took three offensive linemen, Connor Clausen out of Regina, Dre Doron out of Kansas, and Alex Berwick out of Western, and kind of fleshed that out with a couple of teams bodies in Chase Tatarin, linebacker out of Alberta, and Lucas Stoikos, running back, more of a fullback, out of the University of Toronto. I'm curious, do you think the BC Lions hit it out of the park? Did they strike out? Or was this maybe more of a ground rule double?
I'm underwhelmed with this draft, to be honest. Maybe it's a single, is how I would describe it in baseball terms. I know that the BC Lions, in their philosophy with the draft, felt that they didn't need to add a lot of elite Canadians because they've had good Canadian content. And that's part of the reason why they were willing to lose their first two draft picks, Hodge, with their salary cap violation, because they felt confident that they weren't going to be hurt in that way. But if you don't have a pick until the second round, and you've lost your first two draft picks, to me, taking a futures with your first selection is a bit of a head scratcher. I like Hayden Harris a lot as a player. He's a first round talent. There's a reason he's under contract with the Buffalo Bills, and I can understand why the Lions would covet him as a guy who can potentially come in and step in behind Mathieu Betts and provide depth for them at that Canadian defensive end spot now that Josh Archibald isn't there. But he's not going to be here for at least half a year until training camp with the NFL is over, and potentially longer than that. I just don't know that they have the depth at that position right now with Francis Bemi and Deshaun Stevens, two guys who are coveted draft picks but have sort of busted thus far in the CFL, to really feel confident in the Canadian D-line rotation, certainly off the edge. And then Jackson Finley, fantastic player, fantastic person. Can't say enough good things about him, but you've already got a starting safety that you drafted last year. Christophe Beaulieu was plug and play, an excellent pick in the third round, sensational in his rookie season, and has a bright future. Now you bring in Jackson Finley, who's in that same conversation as a plug-and-play safety. Is it possible that you move one of those guys to that vacant Sam linebacker spot? Potentially. Do you look at one of them as a halfback? Maybe. But to me, it was not an area of need, and in so doing, they lost out on the top offensive lineman. I like Connor Clausen. I'm not crazy about the other two guys, but I think they needed to get better at that spot primarily, and they just didn't do it in this draft.
I don't think you could say they lost out on the top two offensive linemen, because they were never in a position to take those offensive linemen.
Top few offensive linemen, not top two.
Offensive linemen. That is a valid criticism, and I would echo that. At 11, this team decided to take Hayden Harris, a futures pick. If I was the BC Lions, having just lost two draft picks, I would not have taken a futures pick there. Hayden Harris, great player, fits their ratio with Mathieu Betts there. Obviously, they you know, if Hayden Harris shows up, he's a day one rotational guy, projects as a potential starter. 6'5", 255, cut up, really productive the last two seasons at Montana. There's a reason he's with the Buffalo Bills, tested really well as well. Good film, he's bendy, all that stuff that you like in an edge rusher. But at that same time, the pick right after this was Sam Carson, right? The offensive lineman out of Louisiana Monroe. The one right after that, Eric Anderson, offensive lineman out of Western. I think both of those guys would have been really nice fits for the BC Lions. Jackson Finley, I'm going to disagree with you here, JC. First of all, I think adding depth is always good at positions where you're starting Canadians. However, I also think there's something to be said for just not overthinking it. You're sitting there, Jackson Finley, a guy who I projected to be a late first-round pick. I think a lot of people expect to be a first-round pick. He's sitting there right middle of the second round, late in the second round. And he's from your backyard. He's a great guy off the field. By the way, apologies. I think I twice in interviews this week said that he was going to be a pediatric odontologist, when in fact I meant pediatric oncologist. He will not be fixing kids' teeth. He will be trying to help children with cancer. My apologies for being dumb. But the BC Lions, I like that they kind of grabbed a whole whack of offensive linemen. Alex Berwick, center out of Western, is a guy who I think I liked a lot more than you did, JC. But I think that rather than this kind of strategy they've had for a while now, which is like, well, let's grab two or three offensive linemen late, I think it's maybe a better strategy. So let's just take a blue chip guy near the top of the draft. They did that last year with George Una out of Windsor, a guy who could potentially even start for them this year. I think I might have used that strategy this year at 11, but I love the pick at 16. If you can add a great player, a great kid off the field, all that stuff, I don't think you overthink it. And Lucas Stoikos, by the way, in a league that is having trouble filling the fullback rooms across the country, a position that still matters in the CFL with all the special teams work and the limited size rosters and, you know, the double tight formations that so many teams use, all those things, I think Stoikos was really nice value in round 8. Any final thoughts on BC before we go on?
I think you're right on Findlay in the process of begging on a blue chip guy. You see a blue chip guy, you go up and grab him, and it was tremendous value at 16. It's just going to be a matter of how you get those guys on the field, right? The nice thing with Jackson Findlay, he's going to be better off the field than he is on the field, and he's going to be a damn good player on the field. This is a guy who, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I could see down the line winning a Jake Goddard or a Tom Pate in terms of CFL awards for his off-the-field contributions. He does a crazy amount of volunteer work. Like you said, he's going to be a doctor for children with cancer one day eventually. He's a legacy with the BC Lions because his grandfather played for the team, was a multi-time all-star at linebacker for BC. So all these things come together. I think you are banking on him sort of filling that Canadian leadership role in the community that players like David Mackey, who have now retired, used to fill. He's going to be the next generation in that as well.
The Calgary Stampeders are up next because the city is west of Edmonton by like a foot. It's like literally a foot, but it is actually west of Edmonton. First overall pick, the team takes Damian Alford, receiver out of Utah. Not a player that was mocked at first overall. I had him mocked to Calgary at pick 8, a spot he may have been available at. We will never know. At 8, the Stampeders take offensive lineman Christopher Fortin out of Connecticut. Rounds beyond that, their picks include tight end Quincy Vaughn, converted quarterback out of North Dakota, Anton Hay out of Laval, Nicky Farinaccio out of Montreal. I'm not going to read every single name because there are 9 names or 10 names here. My apologies. So if you are listening along, watching along, feel free to bring up our article up at 3Down Nation going through them. We will mention some of these picks as we chatter, but I don't want to sit here and read lists of names. I don't think that makes for a good pod. So JC, your initial thoughts on the Calgary Stampeders draft. What did they do well? What did they not do well?
Well, let's start at first overall. I know a lot of people were surprised that it was Damian Alford. I was not. And if you check the receipts, Hodge, back in the group chat, I think after the combine, when we were floating guys we thought to go first overall, I said, don't count out Damian Alford, because I had it on good authority that the Calgary Stampeders had done their homework on him and were confident that the fact that he didn't play at Utah last year was not his fault. So they were betting on the Syracuse tape of a guy who's 6'5", 224 pounds, and runs a 4.46 with crazy speed. I think that's a very intriguing mismatch to add to your offense, and I wasn't surprised to see Dwayne Cameron and the Stamps go in that direction. I like a lot of their picks. The one that did surprise me was 17th overall tight end Quincy Vaughn out of North Dakota. He's going to step in as your short yardage QB right away. I don't see the value as a receiver or as a blocker right now for that tight end H-back position. In fact, I think he's going to be worse at both of those things than a guy like Rice and John, who basically couldn't get on your Stampeders roster the last couple of seasons. He's going to play because he's a big body, can push the pile forward. He's great in that short yardage QB role. I would not have taken him anywhere close to 17th overall.
Yeah, when I polled around 12 people around the league as to who they thought would be the number one pick, there were only 4 names that came up. Damian Alford was not one of them. That being said, I do recall that conversation we had in Regina, and I do know, and there was a reason I mocked Alford to Calgary at 8. I knew that they liked him. So I wasn't shocked when Damian Alford was the pick. I didn't think receiver was the biggest area of need for the Stampeders. That being said, maybe their plan is to start 2. They appear to have 4 American starters on the roster, but between Clark Barnes, Jalen Philpott, you could certainly start those 2. And if you get Damian Alford under contract, remember, he has an NFL minicamp invite coming up still, then I think he's obviously ready to be a backup to both of those guys. You can't hate on the size, the athleticism. I mean, 6'5", 225 pounds, running sub 4.5. There's only a handful of athletes in all of professional football, right, who have those types of measurables, that height, that weight, that speed, right? It's rare. It's ultra rare. So I get the pick from that perspective. And he was very productive at Syracuse. Originally, Alford planned to come to the CFL Combine. He reneged on that. He also, prior to that, transferred to Florida Atlantic, or at the very least announced his intention to transfer to Florida Atlantic. He then reneged on that, deciding instead to go pro. So I think some teams might have been a little bit turned off by kind of this hokey pokey thing, one foot in, one foot out, one foot in, one foot out. But obviously that didn't bother the Calgary Stampeders one bit. They took him at first overall, and it's going to be exciting, right, to see him. I know that Dwayne Cameron, who spoke to the media on Tuesday night, likened him a little bit to a Justin McInnes, right? A long 6 foot five guy with some speed, NCAA product. Obviously, VA had a ton of success throwing the football to Justin McInnes. He's now going to try to emulate that with the Calgary Stampeders. Fortin, I thought, would be a top six pick in this draft. I don't think he's a super high floor offensive lineman, or pardon me, high ceiling offensive lineman, but I do think he has the potential to, at the very least, be a periphery all-star. I certainly think he's going to be a starter, but he's got a super high floor. He's ready to play now. He's ready to be your sixth guy. He's got some experience at center, should be a guard at the CFL level. I didn't expect him to be on the board at eight. That's a home run. That, to me, solidifies Calgary's offensive line really well. Anton Hay, five blocked kicks. You kidding me? At 20, great value for a special teams demon who's going to rotate for you on defense as well, doing some work at safety, maybe a little bit of halfback, maybe a little bit of Sam. Vaishon Genesis out of Guelph, to me, the soft comp is maybe somebody like a Colton Hunchak, who had some success there for many years, kind of a thick-bodied slot back who knows where to sit down in coverage. Matt Stockman out of Manitoba in the seventh round, to me, that's good value. Good candidate to send back to school. Needs to cut a little bit of weight, but the Calgary Stampeders are loving Zach Williams on that offensive line. Be nice to have another bias in there. And Max von Muldorfer, really good value in the seventh round out of Western, defensive lineman. He carries his weight more in his upper body, more of a barrel-chested guy. Generally, that's not what you want. You like guys with lower centers of gravity down in the trenches. That being said, he is a physical specimen, was the darling of the CFL Combine, and was also productive at Western. Not a guy who was, you know, a monster in the gym but didn't do anything on the field. So I like that. To me, JC, the worst pick of the draft was Quincy Vaughn at 17. And I don't think you could sugarcoat that. Quincy Vaughn is a short yardage quarterback to me. And he's very good at that. Scored a ton of touchdowns. I talked to him before the combine. He told me that he was not stopped short of a first down on fourth down this entire past season. Might have been one. I'd have to go back and check my notes. But he's an excellent short yardage quarterback. Big-bodied guy. His dad played in the CFL. His brother, Justin, played defensive line for the Hamilton Tiger Cats back in 2017. But we're talking a team that has VA as the starter. You've got PJ Walker, presumably as the backup. We'll see what he pans out, what he turns into. He started NFL games. You love that, but he's not a spring chicken. You could have had Taylor Elgersma with this pick. I know we're going to talk about Taylor Elgersma a whole bunch later on in the show, so I don't want to belabor it. But 5 years from now, and don't get me wrong, we don't know what's going to happen with any of these prospects. Obviously, this is all speculation at this point, as it is with the teams. They're projecting, they're speculating as to what these guys will become. But 5 years from now, it's not impossible that Taylor Elgersma is going to be the most outstanding Canadian in the CFL. Dare I say, the most outstanding player in the CFL. And we're going to look back and go, wait, who passed on Taylor Elgersma? And we're going to go, oh, right, Calgary passed on him at 17 to take a short yardage quarterback. Like, that to me is actual insanity. So I like all of this draft, with the exception of pick 17. And I'm not for a second suggesting Quincy Vaughn is a bad player. I just had him in round five, probably. I did not have him anywhere near the top 20.
Yeah, I view him very similarly. I think you're projecting special teams value. I don't know that it's there right away. He's got the size to do it, but he's never had to do it before. You've got a lot of key special teams pieces with your other picks, guys like Anton Hay, Nicky Farinaccio, Vaishon Genesis, who I think is the best special teams body for a receiver in the draft. Ludovic Chiquette, all of those guys are going to contribute for you on special teams. So they did a really good job there. I just didn't see the need with Vaughn. Yes, William Longley is long in the tooth, but he's not going to replace that role right away. And yes, you lost Tommy Stevens, but they signed a guy in Joey Gatewood who is basically just Tommy Stevens 2.0 to come in and compete for that short yardage job in training camp as an American. I don't think Quincy Vaughn is going to be necessarily better than him. Maybe he gives you better ratio flexibility, and he allows you to have another non-short yardage quarterback on the roster. But that was interesting in that aspect. And if you want a guy who's big enough body to do your short yardage, yeah, he hasn't done it necessarily in the same extent, but Elgersma could do that. Like, he is big enough to do that at the CFL level and push the pile forward, despite the fact he's not particularly athletic. I've had scouts tell me they were confident that he could do that right away as a rookie. I don't know why Calgary would pigeonhole themselves with such a limited prospect, in my estimation.
Well, it was interesting watching the combine with you, JC. You had a converted quarterback, Quincy Vaughn. He did convert to tight end, by the way, in 2023. So he's got some tight end experience. He's caught some passes. There was also University of Manitoba quarterback Jackson Tuchinski out there who was playing receiver for the first time. And I thought Vaughn and Tuchinski very much looked like quarterbacks trying to play different positions. At no point did I look at Vaughn and think, wow, that's a fullback, that's an H-back, that's a tight end. At no point did I look at Tuchinski and say, wow, that's a receiver. And I'm not for a second suggesting that Vaughn or Tuchinski are incapable of becoming those things. What I'm saying is right now, they're not those things. So that pick was a total head scratcher to me. Other than that, I really like Calgary's draft. Edmonton Elks got arguably the steal of the draft in defensive lineman Darian Newell out of Queens at 10th overall. This is a guy who I mocked at number two to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. If you'd asked me yesterday at this time before the draft, what are the odds of Darian Newell falling outside the top five? I would have said 0.1%. So the fact that the Edmonton Elks got him this late almost makes me wonder if there's extenuating circumstances here. But I'm not here to speculate about that. I'm here to say that Darian Newell is an unbelievable football player. Maybe the closest thing we've seen to Ted LaRon since Ted LaRon. Ultra disruptive. He's long. He is somebody who I think can start in this league for 10 years. Great value for the Elks at 10.
Absolutely. This was the pick of the draft in my estimation. I don't know why he ended up at 10th overall. The tape is not 10th overall tape. He is raw, twitched up, powerful, just a nightmare to block on any occasion, Hodge. I think that Darian Newell can start right away if you wanted him to. He doesn't have to in that Edmonton defensive line. They paid so much money to bring in guys like Jake Ceresna and Jared Brinkman, but I am extremely high on Newell, and I'm sure they were ecstatic to have him fall to them at their first pick in the second round. Going through some of the other selections, I liked what they did with their next two picks. At 22nd overall, they go with fullback Skylar Griffith from UBC. He's not going to be ready for training camp, but this was the best special teams player in this draft, and a guy who I think has legitimate upside as an offensive threat as well. He runs a 4.7. People may not realize this because he wasn't healthy enough to go to a combine, but at 245 pounds, he runs a 4.7 40-yard dash.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Michael Rosenbaum.
Hey, folks, let me tell you that drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that will change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Is that type of physical freak and had 38 special teams tackles in 23 games with the Thunderbirds. You're not going to find that level of production elsewhere. And when he was on the field as a blocker, he was blocking for the guy they picked next at 24, Isaiah Knight, who didn't have the physical measurables, but was a guy who the tape spoke volumes of, right? You see the vision, you see the short area quickness to be able to make the first man miss and slash for chunk yardage. He's got the frame of a pro running back. He's more polished than some of the other guys, and clearly the Elks weren't scared off by the testing numbers. And then at 31, Silas Huber from Queens, Darian Newell's teammate, is tremendous value, because we'll talk later on about a guy like Parrish Shand from LSU and him getting signed with the Buffalo Bills. Well, they've got the same frame, and Uber is better at basically every single testing measurable out there. He is really a superb athlete who you want coming off the bus first because of his impressive frame. And if you can develop his hand usage, I think there's a really high ceiling there with Silas.
I knew you'd love this draft, JC, the second that they took two UBC players almost back-to-back, one at 22, one at 24. Isaiah Knight went earlier than I thought he would. I thought Isaiah Knight would be around 5'6" guy. That being said, I do kind of admire the Elks just saying, you know what? Yeah, he ran slow, but watch the tape. He is unbelievably tough to bring down, kind of a one-cut guy, but also a power guy. Right. He's used to running behind great offensive lines, which is part of the reason he was so successful with the Thunderbirds. But also, I think with Justin Rankin leading the way, he's a great guy to fill kind of a Jeshrin Antwi type role. Mm-hmm. By the way, Jeshrin Antwi, also a guy who did not test very well. But yet when he gets into the backfield, he runs people over. He breaks off long carries. And then he's also going to put up 12 or 15 special teams tackles. Isaiah Knight has not played a lot of special teams, obviously, is the star of UBC's offense. But Jeshrin Antwi wasn't much different back in his days with the Calgary Dinos. He was the star of that offense, learned how to play specials at the CFL level, and is good at it. So I don't think any of this surprises me. It doesn't surprise me that Ed Hervey drafted more linemen than anybody else, using four of his seven picks at the line of scrimmage. And I agree, JC. I do think Silas Hubert fell a little bit because of the shoulder injuries that he's had. He had shoulder surgery on both of his shoulders. And when I spoke to him about it, he admitted that, yeah, once you have shoulder surgery, your shoulder is never exactly the same. But to his credit, he told me that he not only didn't miss a game due to a shoulder injury, he never even missed a practice. So the fact that he's playing through pain, working, rehabbing in the offseason to be ready for the season, I think is a big plus. I also like the pick of Daniel Hosovar out of Guelph in the sixth round. That's a guy who's got a lot of upside, a lot of athleticism. Is he ever going to be a CFL player? Might not, but in the sixth round, he's a good guy to send back to school, see how he develops, gives him some things to work on, and then you bring him back. He might make the back end of your roster in 2026. When it comes to the late rounds of the CFL draft, that's what you're looking for.
Absolutely. And Domenico Piazza out of McGill isn't a bad player either. I think he could be a future center, despite the fact he played tackle his entire career with the Redbirds. And Colby Herford, I think he's going to have a little bit of a challenge making a roster, but he can burn on the outside there as a Canadian receiver. He's got that long speed, and he's a local product. So you like it when teams late in the draft take flyers on guys from around their area community guys to see if they can stick.
The Saskatchewan Roughriders are up next. They had the fourth overall selection where they took defensive lineman Ali Saad out of Bowling Green State. I'll start with this one, JC. I thought this was an overdraft, and that's not to say that Saad isn't a good player. I think he was out of position at Bowling Green State. He was playing defensive end in a 3-4 set. He's about 6'2", 280 pounds, perfect size to play defensive tackle in the CFL. He's bull strong, high motor. I don't see him as being a super long athlete. I also don't see him as being a super elite athlete. His testing numbers did not blow anybody away. So to me, this was probably, and I'm speculating here, but I think this was a case of Corey Mays saying, look, I'm a D lineman. I want the best D line in the CFL. They've got a great starting defensive line. Let's flesh it out with a Canadian who is going to be an impact guy as a rotational player, as a rookie, might become a starter, but he's going to make an impact right away. The reason I say he might have been a bit of an overdraft is because I didn't think he was the best defensive tackle on the board. I thought Darian Newell was. And I also thought that there were higher impact players available, or at the very least guys with higher ceilings. So to me, I see Saad as a guy who is, he might be the fourth best player right now, but a few years from now, I don't think he's going to be the fourth best player to come out of this draft. I think he's going to end up being a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, another guy that's high floor, lower ceiling, but I think you can compare him a little bit to a guy like Corey Mace that didn't necessarily have a ton of pass rush upside, but was really solid in the interior. He's not going to necessarily get you a ton of sacks. He was an effort rusher on the outside at Bowling Green. He'll come inside and be more of a strong at the point of attack guy, but Saskatchewan's used that in the rotation with Charbel DeBeer in the last number of years. He's struggled with injuries. I think Ali Saad's going to be an upgrade there initially, and he'll be forceful enough with his hands and technically sound enough to not get pushed around when you stick him on the field. Like, one of the tapes that I watched was him against Penn State. And on the edge there at Penn State, he was lined up against a guy named Tyler Warren, their tight end, who went, I think, pick 13 in the NFL draft. And Ali Saad was tossing Tyler Warren around with his hands. He is that physically strong to compete with NFL caliber athletes and first round caliber NFL athletes. So it was a reach for me, but I don't hate the pick. And then I really liked the rest of their draft, like Eric Anderson at 13, tremendous value, going to upgrade their offensive line right away, which is a little bit soft in the depth capacity. The potential to add Curtis Rourke at some time down the line to what is supposed to be Canada's team and the biggest fan base in the CFL, that's huge. I think that would be a marketing sensation if you had a Canadian quarterback in Regina. And then quality special teamers and Seth Hundeby, Liam Hoskins, those guys are going to contribute eventually at the back end of your roster and play meaningful minutes for you as a team. Even getting a guy who wasn't on the same number or number of people's radar because he was at the Invitational versus the National, I think that's quality depth if you're going to start a Canadian cornerback in Tavon Campbell like they seem to be planning to do.
Yeah, I agree. Outside of Ali Saad, a pick that, again, I didn't love, but I didn't hate either. I like a lot of what Saskatchewan did. Eric Anderson is going to have to play guard at the professional level, two-time first-team U Sports All-Canadian left tackle, but he plays like a guard, right? The Mustangs at Western, they run the ball all the time. He plays super low for his 6'6", 320-pound frame, which is going to help him move inside. I think that that's a nice upgrade. I think Saskatchewan, over the years, has picked up some more periphery prospects, right? They've got Noah Zur there. They've got Zach Fry. Granted, they were both second-round picks, but I think in weaker offensive line classes, Braden Knoll is still there, a guy. I think he played collegiately at Wilfrid Laurier, if I remember correctly. I think Eric Anderson comes in and upgrades that. I think he's going to push one of those guys out and potentially develop into a starter. Might be a sixth man right away. And how can you not love Curtis Rourke in the third round? Yeah, he's under contract. Well, at least will soon be under contract in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers after being selected in the seventh and final round of the 2025 NFL draft. But the upside here is unbelievable. right? Mm-hmm. And in late third round, that is the time to take this type of flyer. I had Curtis Rourke in the second round if he was an NFL UDFA. The fact that you get him as a third round pick in the CFL after being a seventh round pick in the NFL is tremendous. And you mentioned the hype, JC. Like, I want the 2028 West Final to be Nathan versus Curtis. How sensational would that be? Like, that's a game that, to me, I don't know if it sells out BC Play Stadium, but it almost could. And
oh, we're hosting it.
Certainly. Well, and it's certainly going to fill out Mosaic Stadium, which, by the way, has not been the case in the past few years. They've had playoff games not sell out in Regina. I think if Nathan is visiting Regina to play Curtis in a playoff game, it sells out in a prairie minute, which is something that I just invented, by the way. So I think I love the pick. I also love Seth Hundebee in round four. Hundebee tested unbelievably for his 6'3", 250-pound frame. He's going to be a top team or potential starter out of this draft. The only reason he was available there is because he's planning to finish his U Sports eligibility in 2025. So he won't make the Rough Riders this year, but I think he's a great guy to have in the program for 2026. Should also be noted, last year the Rough Riders took a top linebacker in that draft in Nick Weeb out of Saskatchewan, who was coming off a torn ACL. So in a way, Weeb is almost the new linebacker this year, and next year they'll have Hundebee as the new linebacker 2026. So I think that's good use of resources, getting those guys in.
Well, they've got another Weeb this year as well, because their last pick was Daniel Weeb, the Saskatchewan receiver, who I believe is Nick Weeb's cousin. I think they're related somewhat, but I'm not entirely certain on that.
I assume everybody from Saskatchewan is related, so I don't know. He's got some good speed. Daniel Weeb was one of the top testers at the combine. Good value in the eighth round. The other one I'll mention, Liam Hoskins, linebacker or defensive lineman out of Windsor, kind of a hybrid linebacker D lineman. I have him listed as a linebacker, as a D lineman. He was officially announced as a linebacker. To me, the soft comp is somebody like Nigel Romick out of the Ottawa Redblacks. He's a guy who, you know, late in the game can take some reps at edge, but you anticipate to be a special teams guy for you. And Nigel Romick has had a very nice 10-11 year career in Ottawa playing that exact role. We now go to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, where they were able to take Connor Shea, linebacker out of Wyoming, with the sixth overall pick. They then took Jalen Smith, linebacker to North Texas at 15, and then Taylor Elgersma, who I know we're going to talk a lot about, even though Justin Dunk is not here, and I think this podcast would have been 7 hours long if he was here, at 18. JC, what did you make of the Blue Bombers picks?
Well, let's start with Elgersma, because I thought that was a fantastic value selection at 18. I can't believe that he fell this far. To me, I wonder if teams were a little tentative because of the momentum with the amount of minicamp offers he got in the NFL, whether they still fear that he's going to sign a contract down there after one of those minicamps. I know that's still a possibility, but I still would have taken him much higher. I think he's a future CFL starter. To get him in a place where he can sit behind Zach Collaros and learn for at least 1 year, probably a couple, I think that is a tremendous, tremendous fit. And he's going to be a fit for the Bombers' locker room mentality as well. He has got that same sort of hard-nosed, put your hard hat on and go to work type of mentality that they love in that Bombers locker room. I think he's a perfect selection there. I know some people say, well, you can't take a quarterback much higher because they don't count for your ratio if they're not a starter and you want to add your other Canadians so you can have all your Canadian players for the ratio. I think that's bogus. The value of the quarterback position is such that even if there is a 10% chance that Taylor Elgersma turns into a difference-making starter, you've got to take him high, because that 10% chance is better than the 50% chance that your other second-round pick is going to turn into a depth special teamer. The payoff is so much larger. I don't know why he fell this far, and kudos to the Bombers for finally taking him, because I think they're going to be very happy with this when they look back on it.
Yeah, one of the things I was thinking about, and by the way, we were in our group chat, the three of us, including Justin Dunk, yesterday before the draft. We were sharing different murmurings we were hearing. There had been some talk that maybe Tiger Shanks was the top guy for Calgary. Then there was some chatter that maybe it is Taylor Elgersma. And what I put in the chat was, honestly, Elgersma at one would be smart. And then I wrote a word that I can't say on the podcast, so I will replace it with bleeping. Why the bleep not? And the reason I put that was because thinking back to 2020, like Nathan Rourke was the 15th overall pick in that mm-hmm. draft. And nowadays that sounds insane, right? It's not like how did he get passed on? Well, let's quickly go through that draft, shall we? Number one pick, Jordan Williams to the Lions. Good pick, starting linebacker, one most outstanding rookie. Dijon Brissett, receiver to the Toronto Argonauts at two. He's like a solid starter. He's never had 1,000 yards, but like, solid player. Isaac Adeyemi-Berglund, three to the Stampeders. Good player. Was the East Division's nominee for most outstanding Canadian at 8 sacks this past year. 4 and 5, Thomas Jack Curtola and Colter Woodmansey. Both starting guards, Edmonton and Hamilton, respectively. Adam O'Clair at 6. Once he found his spot at Will, good player, right? Good rotational guy, good teamer. Nice pick. 7, 8, and 9 didn't work out as well. Matlin Riley retired. Mason Bennett didn't pan out in Hamilton, then retired. Taryn Churchill didn't pan out in Toronto, then retired. 10 did not work out for the Ottawa Redblacks because Michael Hoyt was too good. He's now making millions of dollars in the NFL. At 11, Jack Cassar goes to Toronto. Great special teams player. 12 and 13 did not pan out. Travell Pinto, legal problems. Alain Pay just busted with the Elks. And then at 14, Marc-Antoine Dacroix, all-star safety with the Alouettes. Then was Rourke at 15. And here's what I'll say. No disrespect to any of the guys above Nathan Rourke, many of whom, again, really good CFL players. None of them, at this point of their careers, are even in the same ballpark as Nathan Rourke. Nathan Rourke, no, he was not the quarterback that he was now or is now coming out of college. But he is like the face of the damn league. And maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself because I'm thinking back to 2022 when he had arguably the greatest 10-game stretch that we've seen a CFL quarterback have since Doug Flutie. Like an unbelievable run. Then he got hurt. 2023 is in the NFL. 2024, he comes back and he's not really himself. So we'll have to wait and see. It's possible that I'm being hyperbolic and Nathan Rourke never gets back to his 2022 standard. But right now, if you were starting a franchise and you got to pick any player from any team to do it, no disrespect to Brady Oliveira, Chad Kelly. No disrespect to Wynn McMahon. Is anybody not taking Nathan Rourke? He would be my first pick. So the point I'm trying to make is, yeah, there's risk with any pick. Even if a guy is, you know, his ceiling is like, oh, he might be a starter for us at Mike, right? There's risk with any pick. So why not take the biggest possible swing? And that's what the Bombers did here. They're like, yeah, we're going to take Taylor Elgersma. Sure, he might not pan out and might not be a pro, but he might also be the best freaking player in the CFL someday and be that as a Canadian who we can market the heck out of as a team, by the way, that currently, as far as I could tell, has no succession plan behind Zach Collaros, who also turns 37 in August. So I thought this was the best pick of the draft. Connor Shea, I thought was a steal at 6. Mm. I know the Bombers did not expect to get him there. Fantastic pick. Jalen Smith at 15, I thought was a little odd to double up the linebackers, but I think the Bombers think he is fast enough to do some of those rotational DB things they like to do, right? Jordan Younger likes to play extra DB, so I think they like him as a versatile piece. They did also, by the way, as you and Ben astutely noted on the pod yesterday, said they did need to upgrade their special teams bodies. They just cut Max Charbonneau, former award-winning linebacker at the University of Ottawa last week. I also like Ethan Vibert at 27. He's not a high-ceiling O-lineman, but he's a high-floor guy who I think can make your roster right away. He's got experience at center. He's also got a lot of experience at guard. I like Jory Corcoran. To me, he's kind of like a poor man's Drew Olatarski. Not a burner, but high intangibles, good hands, was productive at New Hampshire. Like, I think that this draft, and I will, by the way, admit, just like you and Ben, I have no idea who Iwanosa Uwenbomwen out of Alberta is at number 71 overall.
That was excellent pronunciation there, Hodge. I don't know if it's right, but you certainly convinced me.
I appreciate that. I remember on the draft watching the stream last night, It took you about 12 seconds to pronounce this name.
It
so I
really
practiced
did.
A little bit. And I'm looking forward to, after this pod is done, asking Kyle Walters about Uwambamwin, because I did not have him on my board. Maybe he's a steal. Maybe he's just a random guy. I don't know. But the point is, I thought, and I know I'm going to get called a homer for this, and that's fine. I thought this was the best draft of any team last night. Winnipeg's draft in 2023 was bad. Winnipeg's draft in 2024 was okay. This draft, to me, the day after it happened, I'm not saying 5 years from now, there might be busts on this list. We don't know the future. But right now, I think this is the best list of any team.
I wonder, with the Iwi pick, I'm going to call him Iwi because that's what they call him at the University of Alberta. I'm not going to attempt that last name until I have proper pronunciation again. I wonder if it was a situation where they traded for Matthew Pegersen earlier in the day in that global draft trade. And you're looking back at some of the 2023 Alberta tape when Matthew Pegersen was at his best and when Iwi was starting on that offensive line, because it appears he was hurt last year. And you see a guy that flashes in some of that film and you take a flyer. Like, I wonder if that was part of the process, or they may have been on him much, much earlier and just nobody else was, or he wasn't in the conversation as much. To the linebacker point, I think it was smart that the Bombers went in with a plan to reinforce a position, because they desperately needed those backer bodies. And I think Connor Shea is an instant upgrade. I think Jalen Smith is an instant upgrade. Lane Novak, I think, can compete to be a guy who makes a roster with a Tanner Gadskills, Cadwallader, or a older Shane Gauthier. I love what Shane Gauthier has been able to do as a player, but I mean, his rookie year photos are in sepia tone at this stage. Like, you need you need somebody in there that's got a little bit more youth. And to have Connor Shea, who I thought was one of the top, you know, players available, should have gone number one overall, to have him fall to you at six, it would have been dumb not to take him when you needed that position. I think there's a possibility, not this year, but in the future, that the Bombers can build a ratio spot at linebacker because of these selections.
For the record, Shane Gauthier's 33. So he's old, but like, he's not 40. But anyway, to me, I mean, you said the Bombers had a plan to address linebacker. I don't think that's the case. They did not expect Connor Shea to be there at six. I certainly didn't. I don't think anybody did. So I don't think that was a plan necessarily. It just worked out that way. And I will say this. In 2022, the Bombers did not need a Canadian corner, but they still drafted Tyrell Ford in the second round. It was a great value pick then, and it turned out to be sensational, mm-hmm. as he was a CFL All-Star this past year. I think where the Bombers have erred in the past, for example, 2023, they took Anthony Bennett, defensive lineman out of Regina, in the first round. In 2023, they took Jake Kelly, DB, out of Bishops in round two. And I remember distinctly going to the stadium the next day for Kyle Walters' media availability, and he was basically like, yeah, we needed a D lineman and we needed a DB, so that's why we took those guys. And it was like, wow, you rarely hear a GM or someone in personnel just kind of blatantly admit, like, yeah, we're here picking positional needs. That's what we're doing. And those picks did not work out. Part of that is injury. Anthony Bennett missed all last year due to a back problem. Jake Kelly suffered an injury late last year that I don't think is going to be ready for the start of camp this year. But the point is, this year, none of this looks like it's based on need. It looks like they're like, wow, Connor Shea is available, let's scoop him up. Wow, Jalen Smith is available, let's scoop him up. Wow, Taylor Elgersma is available, let's scoop him up. I thought Winnipeg's biggest needs were defensive back and offensive line. They did eventually touch those, but not until outside of the top 25 of the draft. To me, this does not look like positional drafting. This looks like drafting based on the best guy available. And for the Blue Bombers, that has paid off in the past. Again, with the example of being is how good, you know, that 2022 draft was, how good their 2019 draft was, and how poor that 2023 draft worked out. So I loved what they did. The Hamilton Tiger Cats are up next. Second overall, they take Devin Varisek, linebacker out of Windsor. At ninth overall, they take defensive lineman Isaiah Bagna out of BYU. JC, I have a feeling that you were surprised by both of these picks.
I was surprised by both of those picks. I'll start with Devin Varisek, because with him, I can understand the logic that gets you to taking him second overall or having him as your top linebacker on the board. The physical traits are off the charts. The size is incredible. You can easily say he's got a higher ceiling than Connor Shea. I can see that logic. But if you're the Hamilton Tiger Cats, right now you've got Ryan Baker penciled in as your starter at linebacker. That's not a situation that you're comfortable with in any shape or form, with all due respect to what Baker was able to accomplish last year as a late round rookie. You wanted a guy who can compete to start right now and you're going to be comfortable with. Connor Shea is more pro ready in my estimation. Devin Verisuk is a little bit tentative. He gets lost in the wash at times. He's not as quick to react as his athleticism would suggest. I think that's something that can be developed, but I don't necessarily think from the mental aspect of the linebacker position that he's ready to step in on day one versus Connor Shea, who was. So I was surprised to see the Ticats go in that direction. And then at number nine, Isaiah Bagno was way down my board for a number of reasons. A, like the physical traits just weren't that good, and the production was consistent over a college career at big time schools at Boise State and at BYU, but was never dominant and never seemed to really improve, Hodge. And I frankly liked him a lot better earlier in his career when he was a little bit lighter. Maybe you simplify his job because he no longer has coverage responsibilities and he shows a little bit more flash as a pass rusher, but I was concerned about that. And B, there was a lot of people I talked to who were not happy with the way he handled the CFL Combine and the fact that he bowed out of the days with pads on without telling anybody in advance, which Devin Verisuk did as well, but told people in advance, was clear about the expectations, didn't make it seem like he was going to participate and then backed out, and then was engaged on the sideline, which I had some people say that Bagna wasn't, and he was a bit of a problem at the event in that aspect. Now, I don't necessarily think that means that Bagna was a bad kid. He was probably exhausted because he'd just done the Big 12 Pro Day the day before, and I think that's understandable. But that scared some teams off. There was some scouts who I talked to who used the phrase, he quit. And that is a big red flag when you're talking about evaluating a player in person. I was surprised to see somebody take a bet on him this high up in the draft after that situation.
Yeah, I was shocked to see Isaiah Bagna go this high. And to me, this felt like a positional pick, right? Mm-hmm. Like the Tiger Cats don't have a super settled defensive line. Obviously, Casey Sales is dominant in the middle. Outside of that, you got guys like Miles Fox, Tywin Garbutt, who were solid players for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but not stars. Julian Hauser, who's kind of a journeyman at this point. I think the Tiger Cats needed pass rush help regardless of passport. They've got Luke Brubaker from last year, super high ceiling edge rusher, but very raw, right, out of Wilfrid Laurier. So I get the Isaiah Bagna pick. For that perspective, I just wonder if you could have got him at 28, for instance, instead of 9. Taylor Elgersma, for instance, to me, a much better pick at 9 as a potential heir apparent to Bo Levi Mitchell, who, by the way, is literally openly talking about the fact that he thinks about retirement every day. Like, that is not somebody who's going to play till he's 40. Bo's on the record, by the way, saying he's not going to play till he's 40. That is someone who, to me, like, already has a foot on the golf course. And I'm not suggesting that Bo Levi Mitchell isn't focused on 2025 and ready to play. But, like, him telling Justin at the CFL's recent media car wash in Hamilton that I think about retirement every day. Like, who's your next QB? And I don't care how good Isaiah Bagna is. He is not going to develop to be as good as what Taylor Elgersma could be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, his ceiling is not higher than Taylor Elgersma's ceiling. And imagine how packed the currently nameless stadium in Hamilton would be if Taylor Elgersma was an MOP level quarterback. Again, he could bust. I'm not saying that he's going to be all this in a bag of chips, but I have talked to multiple CFL scouts who before the draft said that he and Curtis Rourke, project as CFL starters. So I did not get that pick at all for the Tiger Cats at 9. I love the pick at 21. Arvin Hossain, he needs to get a bit stronger. Only 16 starts at UBC, but I think a really good guard. This was not a needs pick for Hamilton. They've got a lot of good depth on that offensive line, but I love that they're continuing to replenish that group. Max Bannatyne, I did not expect him to fall to 28. Good player, plays bigger than he is, ran really well at the combine. I think he fell under the radar a little bit with how much Nate Boschman got pumped up out of Calgary, how much Jackson Finley got pumped up out of Western. I spoke to people who thought Bannatyne was just as good as those two. And then I love the pick of Nate Marty at 65. Nate Marty did not test well. He does not move very well, but he is a high IQ player who played at Arkansas State. He's got that NCAA pedigree. And again, for a team looking to get tougher on the off, I think on both sides of the ball, but specifically on the defensive line, I thought that that was a nice addition in round 8. I like the Tiger Cats draft overall, especially this middle of the draft, but I'm not sure about Isaiah Bagna at 9.
Yeah, I think Ty Anderson at 36 has a better chance to get on your roster, to be entirely frank with you. I see him competing with Reese Martin and getting into that interior rotation because he's disruptive against the run. He's got good length in his arms. He can get hands-on with good technique and hold a gap. I just don't know that I see everything that I need to see from Bagna. So that was a good pick to me at 36. I love Bagatine. I love Hassani. I think Ronan Horrell at 48 was a bit of a reach. He hasn't been a full-time starter at UBC, but special teams upside, and then special teams upside with Jake Nitychoruk from Manitoba, who, you know, was not a very good corner, but was a 6'4", 200-pound corner, which is not something you see very often. You project that as a depth safety special teamer, and they needed to add some depth behind Stavros Katsantonis. They got it with Bannatyne, Horrell, and Nitychoruk.
Stats are a flawed metric, but they are also a metric, and I do think that they matter to at least some extent in the draft process. For the record, Isaiah Bagna, 25 games at defensive end for BYU over the last two seasons, 2 sacks. Nate Marty, a gap-plugging nose tackle at Arkansas State, lower level of competition, sure, but still nothing to shake a stick at. 23 games over the last two seasons, 6 sacks. As a nose. So that to me is
4-5.
Yeah, and like so that is part of what's making me scratch my head. So I'm looking forward to hearing the rationale from GM Ted Gavaya, who's very candid, I think, with the media, why he loves Bagna so much. I'm curious to see that. Toronto Argonauts at 7, I thought, had one of the best picks of the night, taking defensive lineman Jeremiah Ojo out of Montreal. I have admittedly a lot of questions about the draft after that, but I will let you, JC, rave about Mr. Ojo.
Yeah, to me, Jeremiah Ojo is your replacement for Robbie Smith. That's his ceiling. He's got great first step quickness, great bend. He's strong for a little bit of a shorter defensive end, but got decent weight behind him, long arms. Like, he's only 6'2", but he's got just a hair under 34-inch arms, which is exceptional length. That's the same as guys like Parashand, who we'll talk about in a minute. And, I forgot to put my onion beside me, Hodge. I need to go get my onion.
I have not. I'll tell you what. I'll finish your thought. I'll take over, and you can go get your onion.
Excellent. Absolutely. Okay, I will go get the onion because I'm doing onion eating expedition due to Parashand. But Ojo is going to be an absolute stud of a pass rusher, and after losing the guy in your Canadian rotation in Robbie Smith in free agency to get a guy who has similar upside on a rookie deal, I think is a big win for the Argos. Parashand, I'm not as high on, and that's why I'm going to have to go get the onion now, but I will let you speak about him while I run to the fridge.
Paris, wait, you refrigerate your onions?
Yeah.
You don't have to refrigerate onions.
That's cool, man. They're the keep them fresh. I'll be right back.
I have so many questions. Parashand, big-bodied, long-armed defensive lineman, played 3 years at Arizona, transferred to LSU, started over a dozen games the last few years with the Tigers. A guy who I know a lot of teams were high on. I had one source tell me he was their number two NCAA prospect in the entire draft. The reason he fell this far was because he is currently under contract with the Buffalo Bills. Yes, the Bills signed two UDFAs who are Canadian, Paris Shand and also Hayden Harris out of Montana. I think between Michael Hoyt, who we mentioned as well, the Bills are weirdly looking to get ratio compliant, at least at edge. But anyway, maybe don't eat the onion during the show. We'll do that after the show.
Well, I think people want to hear it. Don't they?
I don't want to listen to you chomping onion while I'm trying to talk about the draft, but I'll let you decide.
We'll take a pause. I think I deserve the fans one bite on camera.
Okay. Are you ready for your one bite now, or do you want to do it in a bit?
I'm just taking the skin off the onion here.
Okay, show the onion to the camera nice and close as soon as it's de-skinned. Oh, you picked a big one too. Jesus.
There we go. Parrish.
I kind of respect.
Parrish Shad, congratulations on your NFL contract with the Buffalo Bills. You've got all the upside, the arm length, got the big school. I hope it works out for you. I've got reservations.
Show us the bite. Show us the bite. Closer. Oh, there we go. Oh, that's a legit bite. Okay. Keep going. Keep going, onion boy. Let's go. Keep going.
Oh. That'll make your eyes water.
This is the dumbest thing we've ever did, by the way. But I'm enjoying it, and I hope our listeners are too. It's probably better if this is one you check out on YouTube, and we can post this clip to socials as well. JC Abbott, Onion Boy, wrong about Parrish Shand getting a UDFA. Onion, we're gonna start calling you Cheesy Onion or Onion Cheese, some combination of those two.
It's a great flavor combo.
Rose is over here dying. My goodness.
I will eat some more of this after we're off the pod, but there you go. There's some bites.
Those are legit bites, and I kind of question your sanity actually by how large of an onion you chose, but whatever. The Argonauts will have to wait on Shand. That being said, with basically the entire defensive line in Toronto joining Edmonton in free agency, they needed to, regardless of passport, I think, flush out that D-line. Jeremiah Ojo, I think, will be an impact rotational guy from day one, will be a starter, in my opinion, down the road. Parrish Shand, you might have to wait on him for a year or two. He's got a lot of good traits, but I know JC has concerns about him being bendy enough to rush off the edge. I've also talked to people who, he's about 6'4", 270. He could probably add another 10 or so pounds and be a really big mismatch on the interior of a defensive line.
Why didn't you do that? He was
so
in an LSU weight room, right? Like, he was playing on the inside at LSU at 268 pounds. You'd think they would have wanted him to beef up.
Well, we could ask him why he didn't beef up. Maybe they didn't want him to beef up. Maybe there was injuries. We don't know all the details, or at least I don't. I won't speak for you. But especially, and I won't speak for you because I don't have terrible onion breath right now.
It is pungent.
Aside from that, my favorite pick for this team was Joey Zorn, running back out of Windsor. I don't think he's at the same level of Daniel Adebaboye, who this team traded away this offseason due to cap crunch. But I think he's got team's value. This is a converted safety, or at least a guy who played some safety as a walk-on at Michigan State, has been a very talented running back bruiser for the Windsor Lancers the last few years. He's got the size and athleticism. He's got the upside. I thought him at number 55 was a really nice value pick.
What was interesting to me about this draft, beyond the first two selections, is they went with four separate guys with serious injury concerns, right? Gavin Coates, I love the pick out of UBC. I think he's a stud offensive lineman. And if he'd been healthy for the combine process, I think people would have thought of him a lot higher. But broken foot, not going to be ready for training camp. Istvan Asibo-Dadze, I like him a lot more than you do. I think it was a reach here at 30, but good off-ball or off coverage cornerback. All-Canadian at Windsor, coming off a torn labrum, wasn't able to test in the process. Potentially ready for training camp, but you don't know what you're going to expect from him. Jalen Raham, to me, wasn't even on my board. I was aware of him. I'd watched him, but has not played for 2 years, Hodge, because he was injured for all of 2023. And then at UTEP, he was supposed to be the starter last year. Took one snap, blew out his knee again, missed a second consecutive season. Back in 2022 with Middle Tennessee State, he's a good rotational contributor linebacker. You see some upside, but I'm not banking on a guy who hasn't played in two seasons. And then all the way at the bottom of the draft at pick 72, you go with Demetrius Masuka out of McMaster, who is now transferring to Guelph. He's not going to be healthy until at least September because he's coming off back-to-back ACL tears. I love what I see from him when he's healthy, but you're not going to get him now, and you don't know what he's going to look like coming back from that second surgery. So it was interesting to me that essentially the Argos draft strategy was injured guys. Let's grab the injured guys because we think there's value there in them coming down the board. You like the Zorn pick. I love the Ethan Pyle pick at 64. The rest I'm a little skeptical of for factors that are outside the player's control.
Ethan Pyle needs to add weight. He's only 280 pounds, but he did test very well. He's got some nice film at center. I like him as a guy to send back to school and send him with a few pints of ice cream, a few pounds of butter, try to get that weight up. So I like that value pick. But overall, I do have questions about this draft. I don't think it's a bad draft class. To me, the Jalen Raham pick was well overdrafted. I talked to scouts who didn't particularly like his game. His Pro Football Focus grades were very poor from when he was healthy, and you're right. I think he's a great eighth-round flyer. I don't think he's a good pick middle of the fifth round. So Jeremiah Ojo is doing a lot of heavy lifting for me. I don't think this is a terrible draft class, but I have some questions about it. The Ottawa Red Blacks took Keelan White, receiver out of Montana, at third overall in the 2025 CFL draft. They then followed it up at 12 with Sam Carson, offensive lineman, out of Louisiana Monroe. I'll start with this one, JC, because I thought, in a way, the Red Blacks kind of corrected a wrong. In 2023, they took Dante Bull, offensive lineman, first overall. That same round, we saw Jalen Philpott, we saw Tyson Philpott, and we saw Sam Emelis come off the board. And I think that if the Red Blacks could hop into the DeLorean from Back to the Future, they would probably have opted for those three receivers with that pick. And Keelan White plays the game almost the exact same as the Philpott twins. He's not a burner. He's not a huge-bodied guy, but he is an exceptional route runner. He's got exceptional hands, was dubbed the Canadian Spider at Montana, and also had a lot of intangibles away from the field. A guy who was a walk-on, who took on a leadership role after garnering a scholarship, was the team's MVP in 2003. When you watch interviews with the kid or you talk to him, he is a high character player, the type of guy who any team would want to have in their room. And I think that if you're the Ottawa Red Blacks, you don't need a starting receiver this year. You've already got, four good Americans across. And then you've also got their second overall pick from last year, Nick Mardner out of Cincinnati, who was a starter for them as a rookie. But if you give Keelan White a year to be the backup, and then next year you look to flip one of those slot back spots into a starting Canadian role, I think White is perfectly situated for that. I think he can be the next Jalen or Tyson Philpott or even Sam Emelis. He's a little more different than Emelis, but I think he could be that level of CFL receiver.
Yeah, I love this selection. I think it's a perfect fit. It has a need. It's a great player. I think you could have made a strong argument for Keelan White as number one overall, the most polished guy in the draft. To have him at three when you need a receiver, I would have run to, I guess it's not a podium here in the CFL draft, but I would have jammed that unmute button on the conference call as quick as possible to get my selection in for Keelan White. Sam Carson, I love a lot of his game. He's going to translate well inside to guard as a depth piece after playing tackle at Louisiana Monroe. Mufta Egeli was a little bit high for me. I wasn't necessarily expecting him to go at pick 33, but crazy strong. And despite the fact that he's not a great tester, Hodge, if you look at his 10-yard split, it's on par with some of the best testing defensive lineman. So he's got a good first step off the ball and just tosses opponents there. Eric Cumberbatch, physical freak. Ethan Jordan, crazy speed. I think a future starter receiver as well. You're well situated to have two of those guys in your receiving core going forward with Mardner, White, and Jordan. And then at pick 68, I thought there was real value with King Ambers. I understand that man coverage corners are not desired in the CFL draft process. This is a guy who started in the FCS and ran a 4.5 and has 34-inch arms. Those are all elite traits in this draft process. I don't understand how that falls to round 8.
Yeah, I thought that was great value. I also love the Ethan Jordan pick. Great kid to talk to, great intangibles. Ran really well at the combine, 4.44. By the way, Ethan Jordan, over 3,000 career yards at Wilfrid Laurier. He was Taylor Elgersma. Taylor Elgersma's top target with the Golden Hawks. And I think this year you look at Keelan White as the sixth receiver. Ethan Jordan is probably a PR guy. For 2026, I think you look at Keelan White as your second Canadian starter, and Ethan Jordan is your sixth receiver. Write that back up. I think the Red Blacks in one draft, which, by the way, was not deep at the receiver position. White and Jordan were two of our top three receivers. Well, they got both of them, and I think that in one fell swoop, they've not only added some really nice depth to the trenches. I actually really like Mufta Aghele at 33. I thought that was a great pick. I know I liked him a little more than you did, JC. But well, to me,
a lot. It's just he's a little limited in some aspects, and you've got some questions because he transferred down. But I've got no question about the quality of his strength in the interior.
To me, I thought this was a good draft. Eric Cumberbatch, elite athletic traits, not necessarily elite tape. I think 42 as a local pick, that's still a steal. I was expecting maybe a team would fall in love with the athletic traits and take him in round 2. No, I think round 5 is really good value for Eric Cumberbatch. I think he at the very least makes your practice roster for 2025. Our last team, JC, by the way, said this pod would be an hour. I'm not surprised we're already over an hour. The Montreal Alouettes, who at 5th overall took offensive lineman Tiger Shanks out of UNLV. At 14, they take Nate Beauchemin, DB out of Calgary. I really like both of these picks. I'm sure you love the second one. I'm not sure you love the first.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Tiger Shanks. I have a lot of reservations here. Now, what we don't know is, are the Montreal Alouettes seeing him as a tackle or as a guard, right? And I think that's an important distinction. He was a 4-year starter at right tackle for UNLV, graded out really highly with Pro Football Focus. You see the flashes. He's quick out of his stance. There's some technique there, but he wasn't asked to do a lot, right? He wasn't put out on an island there with the Rebels. And PFF has a statistical true pass sets. These are essentially the times when you're one-on-one with a defensive lineman in your pass set as the tackle. You don't have help. It's not a play action. It's not a quick hitter or a rollout. It's a true pocket pass. And Tiger Shanks only had about 90 of those reps last year. For context, somebody like Brett Boyko, who also went to UNLV and was a highly touted tackle prospect who got NFL opportunities, had 273 true pass sets in his senior season, right? You're not necessarily comfortable putting Shanks on an island. And if he's not on an island, then you've got to bump him inside to guard. And I'm not sure he bends well enough for that or drives his legs enough on contact as a run blocker to be an excellent guard. So I have serious reservations there about Shanks. I love the Beauchemin pick. I love the Lassard pick. I think the Hakeem Harris pick at 26 is high upside with also high downside because he hasn't done anything at the D2 level. But in the first round, I would have gone in a completely different direction.
I like the Tiger Shanks pick. This is a draft where there was only one guy in the O-line class who was realistically going to play tackle at the CFL level, and it's Tiger Shanks, and he's a 2-time All-Mountain West first-team guy. The only offensive lineman in UNLV history, by the way, to be 2-time first-team All-Conference, which is notable because there are two UNLV Canadian offensive tackles in the CFL. One of them is starting for the Elks, Brett Boyko, and the other is a depth guy with the Calgary Stampeders and Kyle Saxley, who's been in the league now for, heck, like 7 or 8 years, which is wild. Nate Beauchemin, perfect pick. I thought that the Alouettes had really nice Canadian depth across the board. The only spot I kind of worried about a little bit for them was that safety spot behind Marc-Antoine Dacroix. I no longer have any worries about that. Nate Beauchemin is going to be a good special teams player, and he will be a great safety for them if Marc-Antoine Dacroix goes down at any point in the future. After that, this is a very Alouettes draft. You got three members of the Montreal Caravan. You got a member of the Laval Rougeor, and you've got Keanu Yazbek, who, yes, played collegiately at Western, but was born in Montreal, right? There's a lot to like about that from a local perspective for the Alouettes. Hakeem Harris, I did not like that pick, admittedly. I think that was a needs-based pick going, okay, we need to add somebody behind Tyson Philpott. Hakeem Harris, good testing, great frame, has almost no production from the D2 level. I don't know how you go from being unproductive at D2 to being productive in the CFL, but you never know. Kian Schaefer-Baker, for instance, was once a guy with like middling production, right, out of the University of Guelph. Obviously, he's become a CFL star. So it's not impossible, and I'm certainly not saying Hakeem Harris is Kian Schaefer-Baker. What I'm saying is that there might be a little bit of precedent for what the Alouettes are hoping to get out of this particular player. We'll have to wait and see. Personally, I thought Gabriel Maisonneuve out of Montreal would have gone higher. He was the fellow bookend to Jeremiah Ojo with the Caravan. He is not going pro in 2025. He plans to return to school. Had he not done that, he probably goes round three, round four. So I like that value from the Alouettes. And then how do you not talk about Jonathan Senecal, star quarterback for the Caravan? He's already 26 years old, right? Was one of the oldest players in the draft. I'm not sure he develops into a CFL starter, especially because one would think at 26, there's not a lot of development left. His body is what his body is at this point. The good news is that he's got a ton, going back to his Cégep days, of experience playing three down football. The question will be, can he make the Alouettes roster? We know Davis Alexander is the one. We know McLeod Bethel-Thompson is the two. Can he win that third job? Because I do think that outside of the province of Quebec, people might not realize this, but in Montreal and arguably the province of Quebec, Jonathan Senecal is considered a star.
And I had reservations about whether I would use a draft pick on him. Personally, I see his value more as a positional convert. I don't think he's good enough or consistent enough, I should say, as a passer to do that at the CFL level. But the athleticism is crazy. And he is an absolute magician, Hodge. He escapes the pocket. He extends plays. Sometimes that gets him into a lot of trouble because he's dangerous in both senses of the world. He will never give up on a play, and he'll throw picks as a result. But he is hard to bring down. I don't know that it's necessarily enough to be a scrambling project QB like a Trey Ford, but could it be a receiver? I know he's not super open to that, but after a training camp at QB, do you go to him with that conversation and say, hey, this is your only shot, and he's more open to it then? I don't know. There are athletic traits to like with Senecal at the very least.
Quick correction. Senecal is 25. He is turning 26 in October. So he's a little younger than I said, but he is still relatively old, right? Turning pro at 25 is above what most guys would be. I don't think Senecal's arm talent is on the same level as a Taylor Elgersma or a Curtis Rourke, but athletically, there's a lot to like. I think he's big enough to survive at the pro level. You'd like him to be a little bigger, right? He's basically 6 foot flat, 200 pounds, but he moves well enough that he'll be able to protect himself a little bit. I'm interested to see whether or not he dresses for a game with the Alouettes. And who knows? Maybe he even gets into a game at some point. The fans in Montreal, I think, would lose their minds because he is, again, a bona fide star in a lot of places in Quebec. That basically has it, JC. We have gone coast to coast. We've broken down these draft classes. I don't think any of these draft classes are bad. I do think some of them are better than others. My top one is Winnipeg. What would your top one be?
I think I would go with the Edmonton Elks just because of the value they had at the top, in my opinion. But I like Saskatchewan. I like Ottawa. I like Calgary's draft a lot. I just can't rank it as my top draft because I also think they had the worst pick in the entire draft, as you do with Quincy Vaughn. So if you removed that Vaughn pick, it might be Calgary. I just don't know how you grade a draft as the best draft when you've got that sort of stinker that high up.
Speaking of stinkers, it's time for you to finish eating your onion. Give us another big old bite. Oh, I heard the crunch.
Is that enough ASMR here?
I don't want any more ASMR from the onion. I will verify that JC eats the rest of the onion, though I think our listeners and viewers will agree that you've maybe suffered enough. That's like a huge onion. I don't know why you got the biggest onion in the world. It's the size of your damn head, bro. Like, man.
In fairness, I had it before I made the bet, so I didn't buy a special onion.
Well, and we know it's fresh because you've kept it in the fridge apparently this whole time. JC, what are we going to do with you, bro? What are we going to do with you? On that note, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe. Recommend to all your friends and do yourself a favor. Do not eat an entire raw onion. We'll see you next week when we're back to preview rookie camps opening across the country.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made with the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.